Good evening. By the grace of God, but I'm afraid by hardly any other agency, that gutted suburb of Los Angeles is shaking itself out of the stupor of fear and hate that overtook it once the fires were out and the 10,000 troops of the National Guard moved in. It's an awful lot of troops for a suburb that's no bigger than the, what is it, 70, 80, 110 suburbs of that vast, brash, crackling, and most modern city. I heard and can well believe that there was a hair-raising moment on the Sunday or Monday night when it occurred to somebody in the governor's office or the state attorney general's office that if Watts had sparked another riot of this dimension elsewhere, or two others of half the size, California would have had no more troops left. The mere rumor that this was so could have triggered pandemonium in every Negro section that had its share, and which does not, of tough guys on the loose. There's no question that such people started it. But the commission that the president has appointed has to try and find out why they were able to rouse within a few hours teenagers and middle-aged and old people into a three-day frenzy of beating and looting and burning. The scale of the violence at Watts bears no relation whatsoever to the social condition of the suburb. It's a place that most slum dwellers in any old city on the earth would gladly settle for. The houses are small bungalows, mostly on their own little lots, with lawns and backyards, at least one bathroom, two and three bedrooms, garages, though nobody who built these houses in the 1930s figured on the doubling and tripling of the automobile population, or the human population either. So that the streets bulge with motor cars, a good many, you can be sure, stolen and replated. Southern California has done better than most states in revamping bad neighborhoods and pouring money into Negro welfare. It has never had a poll tax. It never had predominantly Negro sections until the Second War, though it's long had Mexican sections in the South and Chinese sections in the northern towns. Its schools were integrated long ago, though it did last year pass a law which legalizes segregated housing. But you could go on and on, listing reasons why nothing of this sort should have happened in or around Los Angeles. And I don't think that any of us should make a finger-wagging point of the fact, asserted and denied, that the federal government had warned California to expect trouble from the Negroes in the Los Angeles suburbs. Just about the safest bet you could make today, except in the rural Midwest and in Vermont, which has practically no Negroes, is that you can expect violence almost any day, any week, any month, in any northern city you care to put your finger on. Northern was not a slip of the tongue. We're just beginning to realize that the chances of open violence are greater where the Negro has more legal and social equality, but still doesn't have the money or the jobs or the housing he'd like. A sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania puts his finger on the irony that hurts. Dr. Seymour Leventman says, "The history of revolution shows that when conditions get better, people become more openly dissatisfied. The disparity between their lot and that of others becomes more evident. It is not accidental that rioting is occurring after the civil rights legislation, not before." Well, this, as you can imagine, is the puzzling part to most people and the wounding part to President Johnson and to the civil rights leaders and the young crusading students who go south to join the marches and to the former Attorney General Robert Kennedy and his successor Nicholas Katzenbach, who did so much to start the historic landslide of civil rights legislation that thundered through the Congress this year. Of course, every Negro isn't going to get the vote this year or next, or share a white schoolteacher, good or bad, or have brand new housing, or be given a white-collar job. Vast numbers of whites, by the way, are not going to get these things either. The simplest, but the most excruciating mistake that runs wildfire through much testy criticism of the United States is to believe that the Negro is, if not in chains, everywhere subjected to a special and shameful code of legal humiliations not shared by white people at the same level of society. In the South, until lately, this was mainly true. Now, in the South, the energy and determination of the federal government, sending in registrars and marshals and FBI agents, and many brave, anonymous clerks, into the mean, last ditches of segregation, is something to see. So while the Negroes of the South are beginning to acquire the common but vital privileges of citizenship, the ballot, the right to sit on juries, the right to a friend at court, the North, which has had most of these things for generations, explodes in an ecstasy of protest against what? Against law, property, civil order, and its guardians. It happened, and it was much the same story last week in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in Springfield, Mass. But the Los Angeles rioters, unlike the mobs in the 7 rioting cities of last summer, took their protest a stage beyond the first great orgy of looting, which to people rattling around in the same smelly rooms with the same jobless friends must seem like an intoxicating whiff of freedom. The Los Angeles riot, by the third night, gave a sure warning of the next stage in the disintegration or protest of the cities. It turned into a race riot, a hard thing to define, and something that the Department of Justice very usefully pointed out last year did not describe the summer riots in those 7 cities. It should be said, though, that these things always seem to start the same way. A white policeman arrests a Negro. And having looked into several thousand pages of the records, I dare to fly in the face of advanced opinion and say, usually, arrested for just cause. The Los Angeles rioters, having taken their fill of liquor and television sets and groceries and furniture and cameras and cash registers and automobiles, turned then to the people of whom these luxuries are the symbols. The owner. Not literally the owners, though I believe there was plenty of resentment and plenty of damage against absentee landlords. I mean the property owner's surrogate, the white man. They roamed after white men, and they beat up light-skinned Negroes by mistake. And the fact that they also maimed and beat white people as poor or shiftless as themselves is not an accident, but an inevitable incident of what had become a symbolic act of rage against the white man. Let us be fairly clear about the kind of people we are talking about. We, as distinct from Pravda and the African Radio, and I regret to say quite a few otherwise intelligent liberals, are not talking about decent Negroes hungry for a decent house and a place in society. We are not talking about people who want to vote or a seat on a jury, but people who want a television set, a case of bourbon, a girl, a snazzy car, and a wad of folding money. There are living in Watts, the rather appalling number, of over 500 criminals out on parole, and it would be a relief to tie up this discussion with the clincher that they started and led the riots. I'm sure they were in there, and they must at all times form a ghastly elite corps for the young unemployed, twice the white rate, the bastards, 1 in 4, the artful dodgers by the thousand, who thus have 500 Fagins to instruct them in everything from petty thievery to drug addiction to the manufacture of Molotov cocktails. But we have to remember that something very like the Watts explosion happened in Rochester, New York last year, and in Springfield, Massachusetts last week, to the bewilderment of its sober citizens. I believe that the seed of these upheavals, the seed, if you like, of anarchy, is in the poor Negro's envy not of the white man's vote or his education, but of the white man's fancied wealth and the baubles it buys. Whatever Watts lacks, it does not lack television aerials. And I suppose if you sit in a mean room all through the day with a litter of listless children and a worn-down mother, the chances of there being a father in residence are only 3 in 4. And you keep seeing the svelte girls in the automobile ads, and the young white Apollos, and the glowing families, and the house in the pines secured by a mortgage from the silvery-haired saint in the friendly bank. I suppose you come to believe that this is the way the whites live. They have everything, not only the vote, and the clean jobs, and the mathematics, if you're interested, but all the goodies, and the money, and the golden girls. It's a kind of idiot version of the persistent European belief that all Americans are rich. I saw a poor young student a few months ago trying to cross Germany, an American boy, on about $10, and pretty empty-bellied most of the time. In one place, a woman suggested that he take a ferry up the Rhine. He mentioned he couldn't afford it. She almost fell down in a faint. She went off, instead, in a huff. "Imagine," she said, "an American without money." Last year, I saw some of the looting in Harlem, and the signs were unmistakable in Watts and Chicago and Springfield. The envy, satisfied in the moment of seizing sometimes useless luxuries, but luxuries, which are the shortcut to the good life, which is not coming soon, a truth which all the trumpets about civil rights only mock. I said earlier we could list forever reasons why this should not have happened in Watts. The sociologists and psychologists and police and politicians have rushed in with all the reasons why it should happen. The Negro birth rate is half again as high as the whites. Illegitimacy 4 times. Unemployment 2x as bad. School dropouts 3 times. Therefore, 2 or 3 times as many people to a room. Therefore, crime rate 4 or 5 times that of the most comparable white neighborhood. A steadily growing population of young, idle, and corrupt Negroes, already beyond the reach of appeals to citizenship, and beyond much interest in liberty or education, but only in the more dazzling fruits of education. I don't know if it will help much to have isolated this tragic strain of envy, a twisted form of ambition, or to have mentioned the pimping role of television, with its tantalizing exposure of the white man's dainties for sale, or perhaps for looting, at your nearest grocer or department store. But these things don't get mentioned by the city fathers, who either moan about morals, or say the rioters of Watts must be given a new high school or more federal funds. What they need at the moment is a full-time birth control program, the safe return of some of those parolees to jail, a couple of churches, a public works project, 6 playing fields, and an army of colored men on the police force. Good night.